Welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, bringing the tales and stories of the ancient Celts to your fireside. Episode 30, Restless Dreams. Hello, welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show. I'm Gary.
And I'm Ruth. If you want to chat to us, you can do that using Twitter or on Facebook, MySpace or in our forums. And if you'd like to send us some feedback, you can send us an email to garyandruth@celticmythpodshow.com. We'd love to hear from you.
We would. Well, this is it.
What do you mean?
This is the first tale in the Welsh mythology section of all the Celtic tales.
So that means the Mabinogion?
Yes.
Wow, yay!
We're going to cover the four branches or tales of the Mabinogi, as it should be called, the other tales that were found in the White Book of Hraðir, the Red Book of Hergest, and some other very important pieces dating from the medieval period.
Wow, that's an awful lot. Okay, so where are we going to start?
At the beginning.
No, really?
We'll start where you all would expect. We're going to start with the first branch, Puich, the Prince of Dyved.
Now, there's that odd Welsh sound. I'm never going to do that, you know.
Oh, you will? You put your tongue up against the sides of your top teeth. That's gently, you know, the back.
I hope everyone's teeth. Out there doing this with me.
And you gently push air past. So our hero's name is Puich.
Ich.
That's it? Ich.
Goodness. Okay. Puich.
Puich.
Puich. How's that? Puich. Puich. So, okay, it sounds strange. How's it spelled?
It's P-W-Y-L-L. Puich.
Okay, so here goes. Tell us about Puich.
Okay. Well, Puich is the prince of a great part of Wales, known as Dyved. And there's a map in the show notes showing you where this is, and the main locations in the story. He was in charge of seven cantrevs. A cantrev was the term used for a district with several comots in it, cymydau in Welsh. And each of these had at least 100 households and their land in it. So he was in charge of a lot of land. And it was his duty to ride around each district and check that it was all right.
Oh, I see. Right. Well, come on then. Get on with it. Tell us the story.
I was getting to it. Okay, then. Okay. Puich is spending some time at one of his favourite courts. Like most noblemen of the time, he spends his days hunting and his nights feasting. And our tale starts one cold, late October night, as Puich huddles in his furs, sleeping, as only those with a belly full of wine can sleep. This is an ancient tale that we shall tell you, and we shall tell it to you as it was told to us, by one who told it to him exactly as it was in turn told to her. And many others listened to that tale and have passed it on in their turn. Now it's our turn to bring you the story, where love and honour, battles and strange magics, powerful fae, mighty knights and even the gods themselves roam the soaring hills and lush valleys of ancient Wales, the island of the mighty. Long, long ago, on the verdant grasses of the valleys and the tall crags of the mountains, men scratched out a hard life from the soil and for their lords. It was a time of changes, A time of cruelty and harshness, and yet still a time of beauty, nobility, and true love. Some of the great lords and ladies still held to the old ways of honour, hospitality, and respect. They still lived in harmony with the land and her ways, for the guardians of the hedgerows and the fields, for the great old ones that time never touches. Sadly, many of the great lords and men were turning to the paths of power, the ways of greed, and trying to forget the mother, her daughters, and their bounty, and turn instead to becoming the master of others, their world, and all that they owned. There were many cantrevs or districts in the land at that time, and one lord, Puich the Cautious by name, was lord over 7 of them, and he was one that still followed the old ways. He remembered the people of his lands, and he would travel round to the courts of each of the cantrevs to share gifts, to see whether they had any problems that he and the other cantrevs could help with, and to share himself with the people. And they would fulfill the laws of hospitality by housing him and his retinue for as long as they stayed. There were none that could not approach him and be heard. He would stay for some days, weeks, or even moons. It never mattered. One of his favourite courts was at Arberth. Oh, magical Arberth. Nestled in amongst the rolling hills, warmed by the land and home to many visits from the fey ones of the other world. It was here that our noble prince was twisting and turning under his furs, trying to stay out of the cold breeze, sighing through the cracks in the shutters, and snuggle into the warmth of deep sleep. There was too much wine in his belly to make him want to wander the halls of Arberth looking for companionship, and his sleepy thoughts drifted slowly down amongst ancient trees and white-faced maidens, until he was finally asleep. Little do we know of the realm of dreams, where the everyday of our lives mingles with the great powers on the edges of waking, but this I can tell you. Amongst the gnarled oaks and slim hazels in Puick's dream, he was following the beautiful song of small, colourful birds that flashed in and out of the high branches, until the silence fell. He glanced up, and before he saw anything else, there in front of him, in shining majesty, stood the great white stag with more tines on his antlers than Puick had ever seen on any deer. Oh, he was breathless in his excitement. To capture this great beast would be the summit of his hunting career. He started to creep towards it, and the great beast lifted its noble brow and gazed deep into Puich's soul. He could not meet its gaze. As he cast his eyes around feverishly, Puich realized that he knew the location of this glade, and with that revelation, he woke up with a start and leapt straight from his bed. He pulled on his clothes, rushed from his room, without even noticing that the tallow on his light had hardly burned down at all, and headed for the main hall, calling for his squire. Many doors were flung open in concern for the prince as he strode mightily throughout Arberth, shouting at anyone he could see.
"Arise, arise, men of Arberth! Now is the time for the hunt! I've seen it! I've seen it!"
"Oh, what's he saying now?"
"Probably the wine, innit? Lord, do we really have to get the horses and dogs ready and all our hunting gear too?"
"Aye, I've seen it! The great white stag waits for us, my stout fellow."
"Oh, my head.
Oh, no, it's the middle of the night."
The household was indeed raised, and one of Puich's proud companions, his closest knights, rode up to him and shouted over the din of men, horses and dogs, calling,
"Lord, where do we hunt tonight?"
"We head for Glinkich, the valley of the River Kich, for I have seen in a dream that there lives the great white stag."
"But that's leagues away."
"We'd better get started then, old friend."
So they started off by galloping away up the northern hill.
"Well, thank goodness they've gone. We can have some peace now."
Whilst the candlelit windows behind them slowly shut, as the rest of the Arberth household gladly went back to sleep. The horses were soon breathing heavily, and Puich called them all to a steady walk, and they continued on in silence for many leagues. As the sun was beginning to peek over the horizon, Quick realise I'd better find somewhere to stop, rest, eat and freshen the men and the horses.
Delwyn?
My lord?
Where do you think would be the best place to obtain hospitality at this hour? I wouldn't want to offend my hosts.
My lord, that's easy to answer. We are close to the chief grove of our druids, where we receive much of their training. They observe all hours, for the lessons take place under the night sky as much as they do under the sun. My foster brother is son of a druid, so I know of this place, called the chief grove of Diaria.
Oh yes, I remember hearing of it now. Pentruin Diaria, is it far?
No, my lord, but 2 leagues further towards the glen, and it lies cupped in the horns of a great mountain. We cannot miss it.
Sadly, that was not quite the case for Puick and his party this morning. The mists had risen and was swirling around the withers of their horses, and only the hills and their stark peaks around them could be seen clearly. Much of the land around them was forest, so they put their trust in the gods and followed their noses. After several hours, they came out on the top of a small hill amongst several ancient barrows, homes of long-dead ancestors, whose names and deeds would probably only be remembered by the local bards. Puick's keen eyes stared out across the beauty of his land, and there he saw the peak, taller than those around it, as if it were guarded by the smaller peaks, thought Puick. He could just see the line of treetops jutting at its base away from them. They put speed on their horses then, and before long were entering into the mighty grove that spread far up the mountain and lay within its crescent. The druids offered them peace and hospitality, as was only right. Puick and his men stayed with the men and women who lived amongst those ancient trees a whole day. They feasted on meagre fare, for they were forbidden to hunt within the grove, and yet slept that night in dreamless sleep, as refreshing as the innocent sleep of babes. Early the next morning, just as Puick heard the druids chanting their vigil to the sun before dawn, Puick arose, dressing quickly, and pulled on his boots long before his squire arrived to do it for him. The River Kich was no more than an hour's ride from the grove, so they breakfasted well, offered the druids their due, and headed for the valley. As Puick's party approached the thick trees that marked the passage of the river, Puick called a halt, and they tethered their horses to the trees. Each man then took hounds to follow, and they gathered their spears. Only then did they enter the forest. The dogs were excited and yipping in their joy. The atmosphere amongst the men rose along with their spirits. The day was going to be a good and joyous hunt. They could all feel it, infected as they were by Puick's excitement and repeated descriptions of the white stag that he had seen in his dream. They began to spread out slowly to search a wider area and allow the dogs their best chance to catch the scent of the beast. It was not long before the dogs did find the scent and started to bark their desire to be let loose and chase the animal that they could see with their noses. Puick blew on the great horn that hung on his belt to start the hunt, and all the men loosed their dogs. The great hunting hounds leapt into the trees, converging into the well-trained pack that was Puick's joy. He loosened his spears and began to run after the pack, listening to the noise and shouts of the men around him. He ran for what seemed like hours, and slowed to a halt as everything became quieter around him. Where were his men, his proud companions? Where was the pack? Had they lost the scent? He could see one or two of the hounds ahead of him and rushed after them. And it was at that moment that Puick heard the barking of another pack. Unearthly baying that came somewhere off to his right from amongst the deeper and darker trees. And then he could hear his own pack starting to bark just in front of him, so he picked up his speed and rushed forward. As he thrust through the undergrowth ahead of him, he could see a clearing, and his own dogs were heading straight for it. But the sound of that stranger pack had moved so swiftly that they too were entering the clearing. Puick then saw the stag. It was not the white stag of his dream, but it was a mighty beast of 5 tines. And just as he saw it, the stag was pulled down to the ground by the other pack, the most unearthly looking pack that Puick had ever seen. His own dogs were just cowering at the edge of the clearing, whining as if afraid to enter. Quick stood stunned for a moment, stunned by the other pack. They were all of a white colour, a white so bright they almost glowed, and their ears were a startling bright red. Quick was not totally unlearned in the ways of the other world, and he knew that these strange, silent beasts were unworldly. But even so, the anger began to rise in his breast. He was the prince of this land, and as the highest-ranking noble, he had the right to any kill made by any hunt on this land, human or fey, and his dogs should be on that stag, not some stranger's pack. And as these thoughts seemed to gather their own strength within him, Puig shouted to his dogs and ordered them to take the stag from the other dogs. He himself, shouting and waving his spears around menacingly, charged towards the other pack. His dogs, with ears held back, followed him warily. Strange it is, but true it was, that the other pack, still silent, backed away from the stag. And Puig again commanded his dogs to take the stag. They fell on it eagerly, eyes glancing at the weird pack in unease. Puig looked at the pale, unearthly hounds and thought it strange that they were just sitting or lying there, as if waiting for something. But waiting for what? It was only then that Puig heard a movement to his left, a sound of something large coming through the trees and the brush. He spun round and saw what appeared to be a monstrous grey stag breaking through into the clearing. Shaking himself from the vision, he realised it was but a man on a horse, albeit a large horse, with strapped spears rising behind his head that Puig had at first mistaken for horns. The huge horse was a beautiful dappled grey, and the rider was dressed in hunting garb that was all of a grey hue, and he carried a huge hunting horn slung around his neck. His long, pale hair was lifted by unseen winds, and his eyes seemed to hold the darkest of the deepest night within them. Behind him, the shadows heaved with half-seen life, shapes that rushed into focus and then dimmed. Other knights, wolves, other animals that Puig had no name for, as if a whole host of unseen hunters were gathered behind this man. And then the man turned his gaze upon Puig. The sense of huge and overwhelming menace washed over him as the stranger slowly advanced towards him. In the next episode, we find out more about the stranger, and Puig realizes just how much trouble he's got himself into.
Ooh, that was great. I really enjoyed it. I can't wait for the next bit of the story.
I'm afraid you'll just have to.
Oh, okay then. Okay, well, in the meantime, shall we have some listener feedback?
Why not?
It's been a long time since we've played you some. We've had some feedback from a dear friend of ours who does an awful lot of work to promote the Bardic Arts at the Eisteddfodau in America. Now, Gwalchdisto Cambria, I hope I've said your name right, says...
I have a long-awaited comment on the show. I, in particular, have enjoyed and greatly value the Celtic Myth Pod Show. It's an outstanding contribution to the web, particularly for those interested in Celtic myth and folklore. As a bard in the order of bards, ovates and druids, I consider it an essential part in my development. I ever so look forward to your presentation of the Mabinogion with the Arthurian stories included, hopefully. The first one in particular has some interesting things to say, albeit indirectly, about entry into the Otherworld.
Thank you so much for your really kind comments. We've finally come to the point that you've been waiting for, and so has everybody else.
Yeah.
We're really pleased you're finding the show helpful in your studies as well. We'll be covering the Arthurian stories, but apart from the ones that are found in the early Welsh tales, we won't be focusing on the majority of them until later on.
And he's given us a hint about what happens in the first story, so no more hints.
My lips are sealed. You'll just have to wait. However, the next episode could give something away.
Okay, then. Have you got a promo for us before we go?
Yes, I have.
Good.
Yes, this is a podcast called Arwen's Path, produced by a druid called David Smith, who talks to all sorts of people about all sorts of aspects of spirituality, art, music and so on. He's interviewed Dave the Bard, and he's also spoken to Gary Andrews on episode 10 about the Spirit of Albion movie we've been talking about.
Oh, well, I think I actually recognise him. I might well have met him on Facebook. But it sounds brilliant. Let's have a listen to the promo for Arwen's Path.
Hello, I'm David Smith, host of the Arwen's Path podcast, and I'd like to invite you all to have a listen if you're interested. I'm making this little promo so people can put it on their podcasts or do what they like with it. If you know someone who'd like to be a guest or you'd like to be a guest, feel free to contact me at david@dreamswork.com. That's david@dreamz-work.com. It'd be really nice to hear from you. Well, Arwen's Path podcast started October 31st, 2010, and has started going strong. We've had many wonderful guests, and there are many more coming in the new year, and I'd love to have you listen. So feel free to check us out. It'd be wonderful having you there as a listener. The podcast is available on iTunes and also at www.daviddwyer.com. So I hope you'll have a listen, and I hope to, provide some information you'd like in the coming new year. Thank you.
That sounded really interesting. I think we'll have to give it a listen at some point.
Definitely. And before we go, can we remind you that we love to hear your thoughts? So if you fancy sending some feedback, something we can read out or play if you send us a sound file, we'd absolutely love it.
Yes, we would. And it helps us to know that you're with us just as much as we're with you.
That's so true.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it brings us to the end of our show.
Oh my goodness, already?
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
Cool, that was quick. Anyway, so we wish you many blessings and say...
Ulvar.
Well done.
You've been listening to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, available from CelticMythPodShow.com.
We hope you've enjoyed the show and will stay tuned for the next episode. You can send us an email or some voice feedback to Gary and Ruth at CelticMythPodShow.com. The show notes for this episode can also be found on the website. We'd like to say a special thank you to Coulan's Hounds, who provided us with the theme music for our show. Find them at www.sfhounds.com. We'd also like to say a big thank you to Anne Roos, Master Harper, and Keltoria, with a K, Celtic New Age Music, who have both given the show unrestricted access to their music. And thanks again go to Diane Arkinstone and Kim Robertson, whose music has been used as some of the transitions you've heard in this show. You'll find links to all of these wonderful artists in the show notes at shownotes.celticmythpodshow.com.